9:30 here. We'll get the meeting started. Welcome and thank you for coming. This is the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. Today is May 5th, 2009, and it is approximately 9:30. We are in room 413 of the Capitol Building in Pierre, South Dakota. First of all, we will check the phone lines. I already know that Dusty is on, so how about Dave Ziegler?
I am here.
Okay, and George Thompson.
Morning, Commissioner Colbeck.
Thank you. Is John Smith on? No. Okay. My name is Steve Colbeck, and I'm Commissioner with the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. Joining me today is Commissioner Dusty Johnson and Commissioner Gary Hansen. First on the agenda is consumer reports. We will start with a status report from our consumer affairs analyst, Deb Grigg.
Thank you, Commissioner Colbeck. The Commission has received a total of 117 contacts since the last report was prepared for the April 21st, 2009 Commission meeting. 27 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 26 contacts involved electric service, 4 contacts involved natural gas service, 3 contacts involved gas and electric service, 9 contacts involved cell phone service, 27 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, 5 contacts related to Keystone XL pipeline, 1 contact was related to wind energy, and 15 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 943 of the 1,012 complaints received in 2009 have been resolved, and 2,512 of the 2,513 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Grigg? I just have one. Is that 5 for Keystone? Is that has that been holding constant throughout the winter, or do you see the spring pickup?
I think we'll see the spring pickup on the Keystone pipeline, okay, just because they didn't get through the area.
Sure.
So we'll take care of those as they come in.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. First up is consumer complaints, but on the agenda, I'd just like to make a note that telecom item number 3, which is TC09-014, is also dealt with on the addendum. So if there aren't any objections, I'd like to take that item number 3 with the addendum. All right. We'll move on to consumer complaints then. In CT08-002, in the matter of the complaint filed by Roger Hall, Rapid City, South Dakota, against Quest Corporation regarding the cost of telephone line extension, the Commission voted to deny the motion for a summary disposition at its February 24, 2009 meeting. Now the parties have filed a stipulated motion to dismiss, and the question today is, shall the Commission grant the motion to dismiss and close the docket? And I'm going to ask if staff or Quest would like to go first. Quest?
Thank you, Commissioner Colbeck. This is George Thompson. I'm in-house with Quest. I don't think there's a whole lot to say about this, nor is there a whole lot I can say. Mr. Hall and Quest have settled their differences, and both parties have jointly filed the stipulated motion to dismiss. I would say that Quest appreciates the assistance of Ms. Gregg and Ms. Semler in assisting us and Mr. Hall in settling this matter.
Thank you. And staff, any comments?
Kara Semler for staff. No comments, just glad that the parties were able to resolve the issue.
All right. And Mr. Hall, I don't believe is on the line, but I'll ask if he has any questions or comments. Hearing none, Commissioner, questions?
Yeah, Commissioner, this is Dusty Johnson. I do have one for Mr. Thompson. Mr. Thompson, is there any reason that that agreement between you and Mr. Hall couldn't be filed confidentially with the Commission?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 408 in the South Dakota equivalent would prevent the parties from disclosing the settlement.
Talk to me a little bit more about that, Mr. Thompson. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, and I would say every state has a similar equivalent, essentially says that in the event of settlement discussions and reaching a settlement, the parties, among other things, agree not to divulge what went on in the settlement, which, of course, carries over into the prohibition on use of that information for any public purpose. Essentially, it prevents parties from using compromise and offers to compromise in any way, unless, of course, there's a problem with the settlement and either party attempts to enforce the settlement and the other party won't participate in the terms of the settlement that they've already made. I don't think that's the case here.
Then, Mr. Chairman, if I could, a question for Ms. Wiest. Ms. Wiest, I do understand why certain information on, you know, settlement discussions wouldn't be, you know, isn't routinely admissible. Am I wrong in thinking that we've seen certain settlement documents before, sort of the final work product? Am I mistaken on that?
Well, we certainly have seen settlements that have and stipulations that have been filed with the commission for approval. I'm assuming in this case that the parties entered into the settlement agreement and agreed that it would not need to be approved or would not be filed or in would be confidential. I'm just assuming that's what part of the agreement is.
And I can make the representation that that is the case.
Well, you know, it doesn't look like the commission has a lot of options here, but, you know, Mr. Thompson, I raise my question because I know the commission doesn't have a whole broad range of discretion over your catalog, but since this was a matter that came before the commission, and at least it's, you know, hypothetically possible that, you know, similar situations could arise, I thought it would be helpful to the commission from a public interest perspective to see how Mr. Hall was treated and, you know, compare that with, you know, treatment that the, you know, Quest may, you know, how Quest may treat other folks in the future. But, you know, it sounds as though legally the commission's in a little bit of a box here. So thanks for responding.
Commissioner Johnson, this is Kara Semler.
Yes.
I believe the settlement was outside the scope of the catalog. So, therefore, I don't believe that the settlement would have much relevance on other customers. And I would support the party's decision not to file the settlement.
Ms. Semler, any thoughts on, I mean, let's imagine a scenario, and we'll just take Quest out of it, where you've got a company that has a similar dispute with three different individuals. They reach a settlement with all three of the people at different times, and they treat one very different than they treat the other two. Since this is a matter that, you know, came before the commission as a complaint, should the commission be concerned at all about, you know, treatment, non-equitable treatment?
The parties both agreed to settle this. I don't think it's the commission's place to interfere with individual party settlements. I can give you an example, just reduced rates. The commission did not see individual settlements for all of those consumers. It's an individual decision that each consumer has the ability to make.
Yeah, and actually that's part of what prompts this, you know, Ms. Semler, and I may just need to get comfortable with not seeing this stuff, and you know, that's probably appropriate. You're all probably right. I just, during that reduced rates, you know, proceeding, wondered, you know, what if different consumers were being treated differently than others? I mean, what if those settlements varied widely? And, you know, it's not, you know, our job to be the father and mother for everybody out there, but when people make these filings with the commission, I don't think they necessarily presume that if they settle, they're just being, you know, cast out into the ocean to fend for themselves. But anything you can say that would make me feel a little more comfortable?
Well, staff cannot represent individual consumers, and those consumers could have hired counsel if they needed assistance with the settlement. I just state that it's the consumer's decision. They could opt not to settle, and it could have proceeded to hearing in any one of those examples. And that's the whole purpose for the hearing and for that process. Settlement resolves it such that parties don't need to come to hearing and don't need to appear before the commission, and it was their decision to do so.
Similar, is there an issue if the settlement, you know, essentially, you know, at least between those two parties, makes a determination about how that catalog is to be interpreted, and might that be of interest to the commission?
No, I do not believe that the settlement interprets the catalog in any way. It was simply an economic way for the parties to resolve this versus further litigation. It revolved around economics, not catalog interpretation.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Any other questions? Any motion? Iowa motion in CT08-002. The commission granted the motion to dismiss and close the docket with prejudice. Any comments on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kolbeck votes aye also. The next item on the agenda is TC-06 under telecommunications, TC-06-007, in the matter of petition of Level 3 Communications, LLC, for arbitration of an interconnection agreement with Quest Corporation. Oral arguments were heard on October 9th, 2007. Commission meeting, the parties have agreed to a resolution, and Quest has filed a motion to dismiss. The question today, shall the commission dismiss and close the docket? We'll turn to Quest first, as they are the petitioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. George Johnson again. This is essentially a cleanup matter, as I understand it. This happened prior to my assuming duties as the South Dakota regulatory attorney. And as you can see by the dates of the argument and the procedures that occurred prior to that time, this is, in my view, something that the staff is trying to move off the commission's docket. Since it's essentially been resolved by the withdrawal petition.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Staff, any comments?
This is Kara Semler for staff. I agree that it's a cleanup item.
Okay. All right. Any commissioner questions? Hearing none, any action?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the commission dismiss and close the docket.
All right. Discussion. Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kolbeck votes aye also. Thank you. On item number two, TC08-127, the matter of application of Quest Corporation to modify the jurisdictional report requirements in Section 2 by establishing a percentage use interstate usage, PIU floor, for unidentified feature group D traffic, terminating traffic. Quest has filed a motion to further extend the suspension until August 31st, 2009, and the question today is, shall the commission grant the motion to further extend the suspension? We'll hear from Quest first.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. George Thompson. Quest and Verizon, in this instance, continue to negotiate towards a settlement. This this docket, as you may or may not know, is related to a series of these tariff filings that Quest did across the entire 14-state region. And the settlement discussions, although it's my impression that they're progressing, are complicated by the fact that not only are we settling a docket or attempting to settle a docket in South Dakota, but we're attempting to settle dockets in a number of other states, including Iowa, Utah, Washington, Colorado. And so that's the real reason for the extension of the suspension. It's to allow time for the parties to reach settlement.
All right. Thank you. And staff, any comments?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. You'll note as a part of the motion, all of the interveners and other parties have supported the extension, and staff would also recommend granting the motion to further extend the suspension.
Thank you. Commissioner, questions? I just have one. I see that there's a tentative hearing date. Are those on our calendars, and we're ready to go with the hearing if a settlement cannot be reached. Is that correct?
Yes, that's my understanding. That's a date that everyone agreed to.
Okay.
Or dates,
so
I should say.
We wouldn't have to come back and revisit this issue to try to get a hearing date set up.
That's already in place. If anything, I imagine it would be continued.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, any action? Our motion in TC08-127. That the commission today grant the motion to further extend the suspension. Any comments? Hearing none, Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kolbeck votes aye. Item number three, we're going to hold until the addendum. So that leads us to item number four in telecommunications is TC09-016 in the matter of the filing to approve for approval of a resale agreement between Quest Corporation and Virtual Network Solutions. On April 20, 2009, staff filed a letter recommending disapproval of the agreement and dismissal of the docket. Today, shall the commission disapprove the agreement and dismiss the docket, or how shall the commission proceed? First of all, we'll move to staff. Ms. Semler.
I believe that the filing with the PUC was probably just a mistake by the companies involved. It was discovered by staff upon filing that Virtual Network Solution does not have a COA, and upon correspondence with Mr. Kapler of that organization, we learned that they remarket internet product from Quest. They don't intend to provide a telephone service. And I believe it was just a mistake that the interconnection agreement was filed, and I'll look to Mr. Thompson for any additional comments. Staff would simply just ask that it be dismissed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
We agree with staff's opinion on this case. I believe this just got filed as a matter of process without the realization that Virtual Network Solutions was not certificated in South Dakota, at least, and perhaps other states. And so in an abundance of caution, we have procedures built into the company to file things to make sure that we don't miss filings. In this case, it looked like that procedure was a little bit too aggressive. And we agree with staff that this should not have been presented for approval by the commission.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Commissioner, questions? I'm sorry. Staff questions, I guess. Rolaine.
This is Rolaine. I noticed you had filed this in other states. Are you going to be pulling it from the other states?
Ms. Weist, I believe that Virtual Network Solutions is certificated in several states, at least as a reseller. The problem here is that I believe it was filed as a matter of course in all 14 states. And Virtual Network Solutions does not operate in all 14 states. So the answer to your question is we will probably end up pulling it in another state, but South Dakota is the first state to take action on this.
So they are reselling telecommunication services in other states. They're just not reselling in South Dakota?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Any commissioner questions? Commissioner Hanson.
Mr. Chair, I need someone to draw a finer line for me. I understand the arguments that have been set forth here, at least the information that we've been provided with, and I look at just a question more in general than specific to this situation, but if we have a entity that does not have a COA because under the definition of resale, they have to purchase from another local service provider, and then they have to resell the services. And in this particular instance, we're dealing with DSL. I don't know how fine a line to draw between that and telecom, which is obviously a difference. However, is there a situation that could we could see that as a sales agent, as distinguished from a purchaser and seller of services, where an entity could be purchasing and another entity could be reselling, and under those, under that scenario, they would not have to have a COA, but they could still be in the telecom services? Did anyone understand my question, Kara or Elaine? I'm looking at a situation where someone could bifurcate their responsibilities, and then they could end up not falling under our regulations. They wouldn't be required to have a COA.
Well, I'll look to Roland for some help, but ultimately, if the company isn't reselling services directly to consumers, do they need to have a COA according to our statutes? They wouldn't. So I don't think that would necessarily be a bifurcation of the statutes. They simply wouldn't need the certificate of authority to sell in South Dakota.
I don't know why anyone would want to do it, but could not two different entities, one go through the purchase and another one go through the resale, and they wouldn't fall under the they wouldn't have to have a COA from us because neither of them is doing both?
Well, I would argue that the reseller, the company selling to the consumer, would be the company that would be required to have a COA in South Dakota.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? I guess I just have – I mean, I understand the docket, and I understand what they're saying is they're selling broadband, but how does VoIP come into that? If someone – I know it's kind of a slippery slope to start discussing on this docket, but if someone was to start providing – well, I guess that's nomadic VoIP, but that's not regulated anyway. I think I just kind of talked myself out of a question.
I would agree with your analysis.
Okay. Any other stupid questions? I think I'll be quiet. All right, hearing none, any action? All right, in TC09-016, I'll motion that the commission disapprove the agreement and dismiss the docket. Any discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
And Commissioner Quebec votes aye also. Thank you. Now we'll go to the addendum and deal with, can we deal with both questions at one time?
Well, separate.
Separate questions, but, okay. Let me get my stuff here. TC09-014, in the matter of the filing of SS Telecom Incorporated for an extension of an exemption for developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates. On April 29th, 2009, SS Telecom filed a letter and a motion for temporary approval of a switched access rate. Also, on April 13th, 2009, Mid-Continent Communications filed a petition to intervene. SS Telecom filed an objection to the intervention on April 17th, 2009. And that question is, shall the commission grant the intervention of Mid-Continent Communications? How about we deal with the intervention first, and then after that we will go on to the question of temporary approval of the switched access rates. And first is Mid-Continent is the moving, so we'll hear from them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gerdes. I'm a lawyer from Peer, and I represent Mid-Continent Communications. Mid-Continent has asked to intervene in this docket because Mid-Continent does compete with SS Telecom in the Milbank area, and Mid-Continent does business there, has customers there, and Mid-Continent has a business interest in this proceeding and in the outcome of the proceeding because, of course, it would affect the switched access charges that Mid-Continent would pay to SS Telecom as a CLEC.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Ms. Moore, would you like to comment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commission staff. Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of SS Telecom this morning. I appreciate that you have already heard this argument once in the context of Mid-State's similar motion for extension of exemption as well as Mid-Continent's petition to intervene in that particular docket. I had an opportunity to listen to the arguments made, and I appreciate the lengthy consideration that the Commission and Commission staff, gave to the parties' respective positions in that particular docket. And to a certain extent, this morning you'll have to consider my arguments almost tantamount to a motion to reconsider, if you will, simply involving a different party. There are, however, what I consider to be two crucial factual distinctions which can be made between the Mid-State docket and the SS Telecom docket that are currently before you. At the time of the hearing on Midco's petition to intervene in the Mid-State docket, Midco made the argument that there was no continuation of the status quo, which is effectively what both Mid-State and SS Telecom are seeking until such time, as the commission has an opportunity to issue its proposed rules on the development of CLEC access rates. Midco and Midstate here, so if I misspeak, I apologize in advance. Midstate's exemption was up already at the time that Midco actually filed its petition to intervene. SS Telecom's exemption is not yet up. It's coming very soon. It will, in fact, expire on May 15th. However, in this particular docket, there is most definitely a continuation of the status quo that SS Telecom is, in fact, seeking by temporarily extending that exemption until such time as the commission has an opportunity to act in the rulemaking docket. And for this reason, essentially, Midco's intervention in this particular docket ultimately impedes SS Telecom's ability to remain out of limbo, to get something in place that will allow it to continue with either a valid extension or some sort of commission-approved rate until such time as it can make the decision to go forward, whether that be filing a cost study, whether that be filing for an additional exemption. Additionally, the other crucial factual distinction that I see in the SS Telecom docket in comparison with the Mid-State docket is that, again, in the Mid-State docket, Midco argued that it will be placed at a competitive disadvantage if, in that case, Mid-State, in this case, SS Telecom, is allowed to use its current validly filed rate until the rules in the rulemaking docket are released and adopted. However, Midco is in no different position now than it was in 2006 when SS Telecom entered into its settlement stipulation with staff and presented that to the commission for approval of the settlement stipulation as well as its rate. And so really by allowing Midco to intervene in SS Telecom's docket at this particular time, it effectively results in a collateral attack on a rate that's already been validly approved by this commission. Now, I understand that, of course, the commission's primary determination when considering a motion, or excuse me, a petition to intervene, is whether the party seeking intervention can demonstrate an interest that's peculiar to it. And I think we all know that at the last meeting, the commission did indicate that Midco had demonstrated an interest or had exhibited an interest such to justify intervention. However, I would submit to this commission that that's not an interest that is peculiar to this particular docket. Midco already has a docket in place in terms of its own petition to amend its intrastate access tariff, and there's also the rulemaking docket, and once those are issued, Midco will certainly have an opportunity to argue any policy decisions or any legal implications which the proposed rules may have on its rate and its own dockets. So in no way, by denying intervention in SS Telecom's docket, will Midco be deprived of a voice in the process, either through its own docket, which I would submit is the appropriate place whereby it can make any arguments regarding policies, practices, and rates, and also through that rulemaking docket. And I'll freely admit, if I were in Midco's shoes, I would have done the exact same thing by filing the petition to intervene in order to ensure that any positions taken on behalf of Midco were consistent in all dockets. However, simply because of that, it doesn't make Midco's petition to intervene justifiable under these particular circumstances. And so really what we're looking at here is there will be prejudice that will result to SS Telecom by allowing the intervention, because to a certain extent, as demonstrated at the time of the last hearing, Mid-State and staff had already worked out a stipulation, which essentially was rendered moot by the granting of the intervention in that particular docket, essentially putting that docket on a path towards a potential hearing. And the problem with that is much the reason why Midstate and SS Telecom both filed petitions for extension of their exemption. It's not an ideal situation for anyone at this point in time, and it's not an easy decision for anyone as to how to proceed. But the exemption for the extension of the exemption simply allows all parties to figure out what's going on and to take the next appropriate steps and do so in the most time-efficient and cost-effective manner. And by allowing these matters to proceed to hearing, we're in that same state of flux as to what would be the scope of the hearing, which party would bear the burden at the time of the hearing, what are the applicable rules that would apply at the hearing, what essentially would SS Telecom be required to approve or required to prove to this commission with regard to its rate. So to that end, I would simply submit to you that while I respect Midco's position with regard to its petition to intervene and I respect their interests and their right to pursue those interests, I would submit to you that this docket is not the one in which they should be doing so, and they can adequately represent their interests in their other dockets. And therefore, I would request that the commission reconsider its previous decision in the Midstate matter to a certain extent, such that you look at those two factual distinctions, which I think are quite crucial, and would allow the commission to deny Midco intervention in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Staff, any comments? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Gerdes, rebuttal.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, if you take Ms. Moore's argument to its logical conclusion, no competing telecommunications carrier would ever be able to intervene in a rate docket, as I'm understanding what she's saying. Ms. Moore says it's not an ideal situation for anyone, and that's true, and Midcontinent doesn't think it's in an ideal situation either, but it does have an interest in what the switched access rate is going to be that a competitor is going to charge it. I mean, that's why we have interventions. And this is not a situation where Midcontinent can receive relief in its own dockets. Midcontinent has to be in this docket if it's going to be heard as to the propriety of any rates that will be granted by this commission. And so I would submit that Midcontinent clearly has an interest. Midcontinent's interest is clearly meets the standard set forth in the rule, and that is Midcontinent has a business interest. It competes head-to-head with SS Telecom, and to say otherwise would turn the commission's rules on their ear. And the argument that let's just wait for the rules docket, I'm sorry, we've been waiting for the rules docket for an awfully long time, and Midcontinent can't afford to wait any longer, and so we believe that we have to become active in these dockets, and that's the reason we're intervening.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Staff?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. While staff does not disagree with the comments made by Ms. Moore, Midco did timely file for intervention, and they meet the minimum standards for intervention, and therefore staff would recommend granting their intervention.
Thank you. Here's your questions.
Well, I'll attempt one, Ms. Moore, if I may. Notwithstanding your arguments, and you were very articulate, I appreciated the, the give and take that you gave of your, as you went through the process, but I ask you, and you did answer this in your statements, I struggle with why we should preclude another party from participating in this docket simply because they have an option in another docket elsewhere to argue the same thing. That's a chasm to me, jumping that. And if a party has an interest in a docket, should they not be allowed to And perhaps you feel you've already answered this, which I think you probably did. But I just want you to know I have a real challenge jumping that one. When an entity certainly can demonstrate that they have an interest in a docket, why we should preclude them from having an opportunity to participate in that docket simply because they can argue the same points in another docket elsewhere.
It's a very valid question, Commissioner Hansen, and I understand the point that you're trying to make. And I think the distinction in this particular case, one that Mr. Gerdes actually just raised in his responsive comments to my argument, was that he indicated, or essentially indicated, that no party, through logical extension of my argument, would ever be able to intervene in a rate-making docket. This isn't a rate-making docket, and I think that's where the distinction can be drawn from the situation that you're talking about to this particular situation, because, again, this is hopefully a very short extension of the exemption, simply because at this point in time, SS Telecom can't develop a cost study because we don't know whether what we would be able to develop over the course of the next 6 months perhaps would comport with the Commission's rules that may be developed. We also don't know with regard to whether any sort of discussions could be entertained with staff on continuing to use a rate identical or similar to for purposes of the interstate switch access rate, or whether we would need to use the Quest rate or those sorts of things. So under the particular circumstances of this docket, it's not a rate-making docket. This is essentially a request to maintain the status quo until we have further information such that all parties can move forward. So from that point, at this, when SS Telecom filed its motion to extend that exemption, it wasn't filing for a new rate. It wasn't indicating that it would be filing a cost study. It wasn't indicating that it would be entering into negotiations with staff for a new rate based upon data that we would submit in response to discovery responses. We are simply looking for a way to try to handle the current situation with regard to CLEC access rates in the most cost-efficient and timely manner. So for that matter, if SS Telecom essentially in its motion had indicated that it would be filing a cost study, that it would be seeking a new rate, by all means, Midco has every right, as someone who competes with SS Telecom in this particular area, to intervene. And I could not make this argument with a straight face by any stretch of the imagination, or frankly, I would look like an idiot because I wouldn't be able to make an argument to intervene in any other dockets on behalf of my own clients, which I've certainly done before. So I think that's the distinction that needs to be drawn in this particular case. It's not a rate-making docket. It's simply an opportunity for SS Telecom to continue to operate for a few additional months under its current validly filed tariff until it can figure out how it needs to proceed. And if at some point in time it becomes apparent that perhaps rules aren't forthcoming or something else needs to be done, then that may be something that needs to be defined. But at this point in time, as we look towards a potential hearing, I'm not sure what position Midco would advance other than SS Telecom should be at the Quest rate, which to a certain extent would then seem to turn what was initially a simple petition for an extension into a full-fledged cost study docket or something else, which wasn't the intention of our original filing. I appreciate that was an extremely lengthy attempt to answer your question, so if I didn't do so, please feel free to tell me and I'll take another run at it.
No, I very much appreciate your explanation and in helping me jump the chasm, but I don't know if you're doing it in two jumps or not, but I appreciate the information. Thank you.
Any other commissioner questions? If not, commission action.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to allow Mid-Continent's intervention.
All right, the motion has been made. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
And I'm going to vote aye on that also. Thank you. Now, that brings us to the second part of this same docket, which is, I'll read it again, April 29, 2009, SS Telecom filed a letter and a motion for temporary approval of switched access rate. The question today is, shall the commission grant the motion for temporary approval of a switched access rate? SS Telecom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I anticipated the commission's ruling, obviously, on Midco's petition to intervene in this particular matter, and that is why SS Telecom did, in fact, file the motion that is presently for the before the commission. Again, at the time of the Mid-State docket, in response to what I believe was a question from Commissioner Johnson, staff had indicated that they believed that the current rate that Mid-State was billing would remain in effect during the process that would ensue after the intervention was granted. In effect, SS Telecom's motion before this commission to formalize the rate that it's currently using, at least on a temporary basis, is essentially an attempt to formally memorialize that previous comment. As the commission is well aware, unfortunately now it seems like many carriers look for just about any reason to not pay rates. And if it appears for any reason after the expiration of SS Telecom's rate and exemption in this particular docket, that they might think that that's either not a validly filed tariff rate, which I would submit shouldn't be a valid argument, but if they would indicate that they weren't going to pay that for whatever reason, or that it would essentially put SS Telecom into some sort of limbo with regard to the appropriateness of continuing to use that rate until such time as a new one is developed or approved, we're simply looking to ensure that no harm inures to SS Telecom in the interim and that SS Telecom is formally authorized to continue to bill at the rate that is currently set out in that settlement stipulation and what is currently raised in its tariff. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff? I'm sorry, Mr. Gertis, you're an intervener now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we appreciate it very much.
Yes.
So that we can continue speaking. members of the commission, Mid-Continent opposes the motion for a temporary approval of switched access rates. I believe the record would show, and I believe Ms. Moore indicated that SST's switched access rate is about to expire. That is on May 15th of this year. It is Mid-Continent's position and a position that we've also communicated to Mid-State's council that the such a situation is not appropriate, and that following commission recent precedent that the switched access rate should go to the incumbent rate until such time as the commission considers a cost study or any other proceeding to determine switched access rates. If the commission will recall the Mitchell Telecom, as an example, if the commission will recall the Mitchell Telecom settlement some time ago, that set a descending descending series of rates, which ultimately ends at the Quest rate in July 1st, 2010. And the specific rates were that the initial rate of 12 and a quarter cents went on July 1st, 2008 to 9 cents, 9.145 cents, and is due to go to 7 cents, 7.5 cents, on July 1st, 2009. Mid-Continent has recently done a study, and since the first of the year, Mid-Continent switched intrastate switched access rates have gone up 34%. And McConnell believes that that is completely the opposite of what the direction that should be going. It certainly is completely opposite of Mid-Continent's success in having its switch-to-access rates put at a reasonable level that would be reflected by its cost study. And none of that needs to be decided here today, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. But what does need to decide is be decided is that Mid-Continent should be entitled to participate in the docket and to take the position that I've just articulated, and this by granting this switched access rate as a temporary matter, it would not permit the Commission to consider the fact that the switched access rate should be at the incumbent rate, whatever that might be in that exchange. And so for those reasons, we would ask that the Commission deny the motion for a temporary switched access rate and order that the rate go to the incumbent rate. Lastly, if the Commission is considering granting this motion, we would submit that at the very least, Mid-Continent is entitled to have an evidentiary hearing on that question, which, of course, this is not. This is simply a motions hearing. There are no facts before the Commission. There's no basis upon which the Commission can either grant or deny the motion for temporary approval without facts before it to whether or not to justify. I mean, right now, the Commission is in limbo, so to speak, in terms of having the facts to either support or oppose granting of this switched access rate. The way things usually work is that a motion such as this comes to the Commission by stipulation, and the Commission simply approves it. There's no stipulation here. It's just simply a motion, and it's a motion not supported by any fact. And for that reason, we would submit that until the Commission has had an evidentiary hearing on this subject, that it would be inappropriate for the Commission to approve the proposed motion to extend the rate. And I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gertis. Ms. Moore?
Thank you. As an initial clarification, Mr. Gertis indicated that SS Telecom's rate is set to expire. And I would submit to you that it's not the rate or the tariff that's set to expire, but rather the exemption that was originally put in place in 2006 and by its terms does expire on May 15th of 2009. However, that does not necessarily obviate the rate. And Midco indicates that SS Telecom has submitted no set of facts which would demonstrate that it is entitled to continue billing at the rate that's currently in its tariff. I would flip that on its head and indicate that the use of the Quest rate also has absolutely no demonstrable basis in fact, and would actually submit to you that SS Telecom's rate does. The original settlement stipulation, I did not have a part in negotiating. My partner, Ryan Taylor, did. And in talking with him, as well as consulting with staff on this matter, and I appreciate the staff member who originally negotiated this is no longer with the Commission as well, but in talking with staff and in talking with Mr. Taylor, it's my understanding that the original settlement stipulation was arrived at in part upon discussion and in greater part upon discovery and data submitted to staff, such that the parties, both staff and SS Telecom, were able to appreciate that the actual rates which would be achieved through a cost study, if one in effect could be done for a CLEC, would in fact be greater or equal to the LECA Plus cost rate that SS Telecom originally applied for. And again, in that particular docket, Mid-Continent was not an intervener. So therefore, there was certainly a factual basis established at the outset of this matter for the use of that rate. There was a step-down rate, if you will, negotiated in that particular settlement negotiation, and that's what's currently in place. And there should be no reason to deviate from that for the time and effectively punish SS Telecom for not knowing at this point in time what standards it must prove. And Mr. Gerdes again indicated that we should have an evidentiary hearing on this matter, but I would again submit to the Commission, how do we have an evidentiary hearing on this matter, when we have no rules in place at the current juncture to gauge what types of submissions would be needed and how it would justify the rate? And so, therefore, we simply think that, as was essentially indicated but not formally memorialized in Mid-State's docket, that SS Telecom, on a temporary basis and for the process that ensues from here on out until conclusion of this particular docket, that SS Telecom should be able to use the rate in its validly filed tariff. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Staff?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and staff would recommend granting the motion for temporary approval of the switched access rates.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Commission questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would ask Ms. Wiest if she could provide any insight.
It would be my position that if you read the stipulation that was entered into that talked about the May 15th date, I think it states that the rates are frozen until May 15th. And then once that rate freeze has concluded, and that, I mean, we're talking about after the rate freeze has concluded, it says SS Telecom shall request an additional extension or file to update. Well, SS Telecom has requested an additional extension. I think that the rates, their current rates, remain in effect past May 15th because I believe they are in accordance with the original stipulation that they entered into. And I don't think there's any commission precedent that states that if, you know, once a settlement agreement expires, that a CLEC rate defaults to the Quest rate. I don't see any commission orders out that says that. I don't see any commission rules out that says that.
So, Ms. Wiest, is it your contention that it doesn't matter what decision the commission makes, that in either case, either a yes or a no vote on the pending motion would result in the same rate being applied on a go-forward basis until the commission does something else proactively to change it?
Yes, I think you could vote yes, but I think even under the settlement agreement as is written, the rate still continues to go forward. There is nothing that says that this rate defaults to the Quest rate.
Okay, Commissioner Kolbeck, if I might, I just might pause and ask Mr. Gerdes and Ms. Moore to what extent they agree with, and Ms. Kramer, to what extent they agree with Ms. Weiss' analysis.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Moore, would you like to go first?
Thank you. Commissioner Johnson, I would agree with Ms. Weiss' analysis, obviously to the extent that I do not think there is anything in the original settlement stipulation which would require a default to the Quest rate. I appreciate the distinction that you're trying to draw between a yes and no vote on this particular matter. I would submit, however, that I think a yes vote would be more appropriate simply because it would formalize continued use of that rate, so as to ensure that no other IXC or any other party out there, and granted, I have no reason to believe that could be the case, but to ensure that SS Telecom can continue to bill at that rate and receive payment for that rate, such to ensure that we don't end up in front of the commission on other matters, on billing disputes or non-payment issues whatsoever. So I concur with Ms. Wee's comments. I would just offer that additional comment that I think one more affirmative step needs to be taken in order to ensure that all parties are on the same page with regard to whether that is, in fact, a validly filed rate. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Mr. Gerdes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, it would be Mid-Continent's position that the Commission has established a precedent in Mid-Continent's docket and has indicated that at the end of a particular rate's life, which this I'm looking at the stipulation here in SS Telecom matter, and the rate is good for 3 years according to the terms of the stipulation, and that's it. We would submit that based upon recently set precedent by the commission that it should default to the incumbent rate thereafter, unless the commission orders otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. Staff would agree with Ms. Wee's comments.
Ms. Wee's comments?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I think the commission can affirmatively state that these rates remain in effect, and you can do that by granting the motion or, you know, however you want to do it. But I just wanted to make clear that it's my position that these rates are in effect today. They will be in effect after May 15th, and to the extent that they want the motion granted, I don't have any problems with that.
And Commissioner Johnson, do you want to continue your line of questioning? Or?
Well, I might just float a possibility. I mean, Ms. Weiss, could the commission on its own motion do something like just make a clarification, you know, so that we have some affirmative movement by the commission to respond to Ms. Moore's concern?
Yes, I think it, to the extent you want to state in the order that the commission finds that the rates continue in effect, you can state that in that order.
So are there any advantages to doing it that way as opposed to just approving Ms. Moore's motion?
Well, I think either one gets you to where, you know, I think we need to go, which is that the rate still remains in effect.
Okay. Because she's asking for the commission to grant her motion for a temporary approval. Another option would just be for the commission to say, hey, we want to clarify what happens after the 3 years.
Right.
Which is a little bit different legal animal, I would suspect.
Yes, it is. There is a difference in how you get to that the same place, but there is a difference in how you get there. So I think you can say that the commission finds that the rate continues in effect.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Commissioner Hansen, anything? It's kind of that's exactly. I think Commissioner Johnson and I were actually on the same thought path because. I was asking Elaine the same thing. I kind of wish the question would say grant the motion for an extension instead of temporary approval of the switch to access rate. But I feel that if they're frozen, they can either go up or down. I don't think that being unfrozen necessarily means that things will drop. Since they were at the LECA Plus rate and came down, you could stand a reason that once they're unfrozen, that I go right back up to the LECA Plus rate. So I definitely agree with the thought process of Ms. Wiest and Commissioner Johnson. Any other comments?
Well, Commissioner Kolbeck, I might just add, you know, I've thought about the best way to do this. In the end, I just think for simplicity's sake, I'm probably leaning toward granting Ms. Moore's request. I just think it's a little bit cleaner than maybe doing something on our own.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got, too, is that if we start to put our own motions in, it could kind of muck it up a little bit. So any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm in favor of the motion as it's written. However, I am also interested in being certain that we clarify that the present rate continues in effect. Ms. Weiss?
And I think the order could reflect both. I think you could make you could grant the motion for temporary approval of switch to access rate, but in that order, I think you can also state, you know, as a further ground for finding that these rates remain in effect, the fact that the settlement stipulation more or less contemplated the fact that after May 15th, the party could file a request for an extension, which I think implied that the rate did continue in effect. So I think both could be put in that order.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Any other discussion? If not a motion, I can I'll try it here. In TC09-014, I'll motion that the commission grant the motion for temporary approval of switched access rates, but also that the, help me out here, that after May 15, 2009, the rates are unfrozen, which does not correlate to...
And the current rate remains in effect.
And would leave the current rate base in effect. Would that accomplish what you had in mind also, Commissioner Johnson?
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion? I should ask that, I guess. If not, Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye on that also. That brings us to the end of the addendum. There are a number of announcements I'll draw your attention to at the end of the agenda. Other than wishing Mr. Max Johnson a huge happy birthday in Mitchell, South Dakota, is there any other business before the commission? If not, we're dismissed.